I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Wearing a mask is an act of love. Where to?
Wear as many as can fit on your face. It's WUSB Stony Brook 6 o'clock, time for Off the Wall. Evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. The Man Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yeah, what's up?
How you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good.
Oh, yeah? Why?
I'm good. You know why I'm good?
I could probably guess, but why don't tell everyone?
I did already tell you.
Yeah.
It's more exciting than you're making it sound, Kyle. It really is. I found out that I qualify for the damn vaccine. And you know why? I qualify because of what the cops did to me in 2004 in New York City when they arrested a whole bunch of people just for standing on the street. And they threw us into this horrible place called Pier 57. And that's how I developed asthma. And because I developed asthma, I qualify for the pandemic relief, for the vaccine. Isn't that great? So I want to thank the cops of New York, the NYPD. You made this possible, and I don't know where I would be without you.
What episode can the listeners tune into to hear you recording your impressions in a porta potty?
That's the part you remember. Just so you know.
You brought it up.
I was in the porta. I didn't bring the porta potty up, but the reason I was in the porta potty in the first place was because that was, in effect, a recording studio. I could get away from all the sound. There were 1,000 people all locked up together.
Oh, it was the free speech studio.
Yeah, well, more or less. You know, I don't think you would have been very popular there. I think with all this questioning and mocking, I don't think that would have gone over very well. But yeah, that's where I was, because I managed to smuggle 2 phones. Yeah, not just one phone. I smuggled 2 phones into the prison. It was a prison for 3 days. So, yeah, I was kind of proud of that. I was kind of proud of knowing, yeah, I could do this under duress. I can put a phone where it shouldn't be and get it into a place and then report out.
Well, it was the only real word that was getting out from there, so kind of vital for news reporting. And I think fair play, considering they wrapped you up in this kettle erroneously without actually giving much thought to the fact that you were reporting on the thing, just from a sidewalk where all the action was.
And I got it all on tape. I was recording because I was a reporter. I got them saying, "Are you a reporter?" And I said, "Yes." And they said, "No, you're not, because we say you're not." Pretty much words to that effect.
Well, just because they deem you not credible in their eyes doesn't mean you stop being what you proclaim to be. In fact, if you have any value, if you're worth your salt as a reporter, you continue to completely make it just 100% clear that that is your job and you are there to do it.
That is almost word for word what they say to you, though. If you don't meet our definition of a reporter, then you are not a reporter. And getting an NYPD press pass, I might add, is extremely difficult. Most stations only get one per entire staff. It's really not something you need unless you plan on going behind police lines and looking at dead bodies and things like that, which I don't really have a desire to do. I was simply documenting people who were playing music in a street during the RNC, far away from the RNC too, downtown Union Square, and it was a very celebratory atmosphere until the police penned everybody in, and it didn't matter where you were, it didn't matter who you were. It was really really something.
The way they do that is actually under scrutiny, I believe. There's a pretty strong feeling from the professional associations, specifically photographers and reporters and writers, who are basically unable to cover certain events because of the draconian and bureaucratic ways that the NYPD issues those. And there's been a lot of criticism around that, and I think that's getting more and more attention. You've brought it up a couple times over the years. You've told me about how ridiculous and what a joke it is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, add that to the reasons for that particular institution here in New York, but it's not gone unnoticed.
Well, I'm glad the 16 years that have passed since this happened, we're still looking into stopping it. I've seen that orange mesh, you know, brought out, and it terrifies me to this day.
I think it's snow fence.
They call it snow fence. How nice. There's a lot of snow, and I don't see any of that.
So I heard there was a bunch of cussing on the television today.
Oh, yes. Today was the first day of the trial. First day of Donald Trump's second trial. Does that make sense?
Second impeachment trial.
Yeah, I should say that, too, because he's had lots of trials, I'm sure. Second impeachment trial in this term. Hopefully he doesn't have another one.
I remember the first one.
Do you remember that?
It was a year ago.
It was one year ago.
Yeah, yesterday.
That's all it was. And you also remember that the Republicans refused to allow the trial to go forward. It wasn't a trial because they wouldn't permit it. They were in charge then, no witnesses allowed, and since there are no witnesses, well, then you're innocent because nobody said you're guilty. No witnesses, because we say there's not. It's the way Republicans do things. I am in awe of it. It's just so incredible.
I would say that's even evidence for this particular trial, because that was the beginning of the demagoguery, or at least mid-demagoguery.
Oh, it was well past mid. Yes.
Basically substantiated a lot of the demonization of Democrats, because the thing that they were saying at the time was that it was all some big grand thing. Well, now that's come home to roost. And it's really just a fuel for the immense tire fire that is that administration.
Well, I mean, they're still manipulating the system. They're still getting their way, because the way the system works, you have to have 2/3, and we pretty much know that we're not going to get 2/3 of the Senate to vote to impeach or vote to convict Trump, no matter what is brought out. The thing that really gets me. They basically pressured the Democrats to hold the trial after Trump was gone, and now they're saying, well, because Trump is gone, you can't have a trial. You know, it's that amazing Republican logic that we don't see coming for some reason, and it always broadsides us. I don't see, you know, how we can't predict. That's exactly what they're going to do. Another thing, I think Democrats are making a big mistake if they continue to say that they want to prevent Trump from running again. That gives him too much power. That makes it seem like you're really afraid of him, and that is the primary objective. That is the primary goal. And they're already latching on to this. I think it's a big mistake to continue to focus on that. Convict the bastard because he's guilty, because he's responsible for the death of at least 5 people. He's responsible for an insurrection that almost toppled our entire government. He is guilty of that. And icing on the cake is the fact that he'll never run again. Fine. But that's not the reason you're doing this. If it is, all you're doing is propelling him to this godlike status that so many Republicans seem to want at this stage. My God, it's disgusting. We just saw on last night's Daily Show, there was a clip piece of Lou Dobbs. And all the high praise he has heaped upon Trump over the years. And they closed it exactly the way I think we were both thinking. The most North Korean commentator that we have.
Broadcast.
Yeah.
Broadcasting.
And he just, the adulation, it was sickening. And he's not alone. He's not the only one. Thank God he's gone. And he's not canceled. Let me just clear people up on this. Democrats and liberals get blamed for canceling all the time. Okay, what do you call what's going on now for any Republican who dared to say that, yes, we should vote to impeach Trump after his reprehensible actions of last month? What happened to Liz Cheney? You know, they're going to be primaried. They're having mass rallies against them. If that's not canceling, then nothing is canceling. Okay, so I'm seeing a lot of canceling happening on the Republican side right now. And if somebody loses their TV show because of the outrageous things they're saying, I don't think that's canceling. I mean, you know, technically it's canceling on the TV network, yes. But it's quality control. You don't want somebody on your airwaves doing things that are libelous, false, or just bad, no matter how popular they happen to be. You know, it's called standards. Yeah, I'm surprised as anybody that Fox has them. Maybe it's just fear because they realize how libelous things are going to get for them. I mean, even OAN. OAN. What is it? One American Network? Is that what that stands for?
It does, I believe.
God help Optimum if they ever add that network. They added, Max?
Newsmax.
Newsmax. That's terrible. But if they ever add that, it's the most conspiracy-ridden, awful crap. Anyway, even they are terrified of lawsuits. They had the pillow guy on, and he wouldn't shut up about the election being stolen, and they kept trying to, one anchor even walked off saying, I can't do this. We have to stop this, because he is basically getting them into hot water by espousing all these disproven viewpoints that are, quite frankly, libelous of these companies and people.
Just the sentence of the pillow guy, I mean, referring to that, that's just...
That's where we are.
In and of itself is surreal, but indeed it is the pockets of entities that had been deridden derided by Giuliani and Sidney Powell, and this claim that there was the false claim that there was fraud that somehow changed the result of the election. And the two companies, I think Dominion and Systematic, I don't know what the name of the other company is.
They probably prefer that.
They both, now that the sort of dust and so forth and froth and flotsam and jetsam of the political run-up is over, they've taken stock and taken issue with how their name and likeness was so sullied during that
dragged
period.
Through the mud, I believe is the
totally
phrase. Yes.
And they have every right to seek some kind of restitution to be made whole reputationally.
Was it $1.2 billion from Giuliani alone?
Yes.
What it was. I love that.
And $2 billion, I believe, from the networks.
Aim high. That's what I say.
They added things up, and these are, I think Fox was one of them, it was $2 billion, and then OAN followed suit because they're like, well, we don't have standards and practices, but if we did, and it was anything like Fox's right now, we should probably go that way if we want to continue to exist. So they're being vaporized, but it's not canceled. It is liability.
It's consequenced. That's the word. Yeah, you've been consequenced. It's not canceled.
And I will.
You say something, you pay the price.
Surely. Yeah, whatever it may be. And that is a matter of perspective sometimes, and you have to consider damage you might not aware, like the impact that you are not aware you had. You're supposed to be able to foresee that with a certain amount of adult judgment. And, of course, that is what we'll hear tomorrow, the cluelessness, the innocent and naive President Trump, who didn't possibly think in a million years what he was doing on the day that votes were being counted would do anything to disrupt, let alone metastasize into a full-blown insurrection. No, he's pure and has absolutely no sense of the damage he might have contributed to that. No. Yeah, and so it's going to go on like that for 16 hours at least. And at the end of it, as you said, there's a good chance they will not do the right thing in the Senate, a lot of senators. However, it is stirring to hear the testimony, and the thing that we were starting the conversation with is the reel that they played, and
yes.
They are really impressing, I think, everyone, because it's exactly what we all witnessed and remember.
You say that the Senate won't do the right thing. I think they already did the right thing, at least the Democrats did, by playing that.
Yep.
And that film played over every broadcast TV, except for Fox, every broadcast TV network. And I don't know how the FCC is going to handle that, because, boy, there were a lot of F-bombs being broadcast into homes all over the country today. Every news network, it was basically, what, a 20-minute film that documented January 6th?
Yes, it sure was. And I think the critique was that it was edited. But of course it was edited, because if any one person who experienced that day would have a distinct picture. It was based on whatever you were watching.
Yeah, you want C-SPAN again? We can play you C-SPAN for 12 hours. You want that?
Yeah, but you have to edit for context. And what I think you're going to see a lot of is this playing, this sort of reconstructive timeline, mm-hmm. being built very vividly of things that you may not have seen and you may not have been aware of while that was going on.
I thought I saw a lot, and there's a lot there I didn't see, and it really, I was reading what a lot of reporters who were on the scene on January 6th were saying on Twitter, and they were very emotional just witnessing all that coming back. And, you know, you can say, oh, film can be manipulated. Yeah, you know what? So can words. When you're making an argument in a courtroom, you're manipulating the facts yourself. This is no different, except for the fact that we're seeing through the eyes of the camera what actually happened. Now, you can say that it's exaggerated, but it's hard to say that when you see Trump saying something on stage and then you cut to somebody repeating word for word what he just said. Obviously, that is a reaction to that. It's related. It's something that is a direct cause and effect. That is the point.
Well, the other, yes, the sheer coordination, you can't deny how connected people were. And I think that's also going to be recreated and reconstructed in a retrospective of that timeline. And yes, the editing influences you, but it is to show exactly what was going on. They're able to get the timing just right so that one part of the event is at one moment saying one thing, and that contrasts with the arguments that Republicans were making on the floor of the House when the articles were, you know, all of those different things, getting them lined up in that period of time as it plays out is really crucial, because you can show that connection. And as people move from one place to another, the reason they can chant those things, the reason they know, is they're getting alerts. And the same thing with, like, tweets mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Or they're able to stream the speech as they're walking up the mall or whatever. I mean, it was not that this was some medieval crowd that was not online or not aware of what was being said.
They seem pretty medieval at times, but yes.
I said that intentionally. Mm-hmm. But the point is, there was definitely a connection and a causal relationship, and that's going to be shown. And the editing itself was not editing; it was just aligning. It was like lining it up in time and flipping from one to the other, as though something was going on in one place and something was going on in the other, and then they both collide. You see the events.
I've seen deceptive documentations of things that have happened where words are manipulated or scenes are thrown in out of sequence. Or completely fabricated. This was not that. This was something that I believe it moved in a particularly linear fashion, and showed what was happening without narration, word for word, what was going on. It's very hard to dispute. It is very hard to dispute. Now, what the Republicans are disputing today is the constitutionality. Well, they lost that argument because obviously more people in the Senate believe that it is constitutional to put Trump on trial after he left office. It's very, very shady for the Republicans to be bringing this up now after pushing for the trial to happen after he left office. I can't believe we're even having this conversation, and I hope that conversation stops and that we move on to what about what he is accused of. What is your defense for that? That's what I want to hear. I want to hear them try and justify what happened on January 6th. I want to hear them try and say that he had no connection to that. One of the funniest arguments I heard was that, well, people were planning on going there before the speech, so he's not involved. Okay, you do know that he was talking about January 6th for at least a week before that speech. He got all those people to go there. The speech isn't where it all began. The speech is where it culminated. I could argue this case. It's not that hard.
Yeah, he, in fact, was the one who planned it.
Yes.
With busloads of supporters
uh-huh.
to match. It's not unclear. It is incredibly obvious, and that is it. That the philosophical, the sort of rhetorical corners that the Republicans are going to be in and trying to argue their way out of will be really hard to listen to, but they deserve their time and get their time there to make some semblance of a case. But it's going to be pretty gross to sit through while they try to backpedal out of the timing, you know, why that day.
It was hard for Trump to listen to it, from what I heard. The opening attorney was rambling, had trouble finding the pathway, I guess, that he was looking for. I heard Trump was screaming at the TV again and not confirmed, but not very happy from what I understand. I think what they should do is play that video again and then take a vote at that point. Say, okay, those of you who think that Trump doesn't bear any responsibility for this, when the evidence is right there, you won't get any clearer than that. Go on the record right now and say, this is okay. This is something that he doesn't bear any responsibility for. Go ahead. And that's the best we're going to do anyway. So why not have them vote at the most egregious moment of the trial, when you see for yourself just how horrible it actually was and his direct connection to it. And yeah, go ahead and do that. It's
so cool too, the logical narrowing of the arguments by the process. That's what the certification of the votes was for. That you get your chance to have a case, that's it. It's over. They've been counted. Yeah, you get 16 hours to argue this. You want to sit here and talk about something that's already been decided? And that's the same reason they had the vote for whether it is constitutional. Because that is not what we want to spend time tomorrow discussing and pondering in light of the evidence that will certainly be presented.
Yeah, why
is it okay? Is the election fraudulent? Oh, is it okay to do it? No, those
why
are the way.
Why didn't they have that argument, that discussion of whether it's constitutional, before they all left for their vacation in early January? You know, that would have been a nice time to do it, you know, to say, okay, it's not constitutional to have this after he leaves office, so let's do it now, before he leaves office. But no, they said, no, we're not going to do it until January 21st, the day after. And now you're going to say that it's not constitutional because it's January 21st?
I got to wag my finger. I'm wagging it.
Go ahead, wag away.
Yeah, so this just remember is not happening in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
There are other priorities. There is a new administration coming in. There is a global pandemic occurring. There were a lot of other factors that led up to, and the peaceful transition, which did not necessarily occur at all,
no.
But for the technical aspect of it occurring, the event itself, notwithstanding, was imminent, and the current administration wanted to at least get people in place. Remember, people weren't even confirmed or from his cabinet yet. I mean, we were worried about like national security and other preliminary appointees getting in and getting in place before the inauguration itself. So those factors I would raise to you in asking, you know, what choice did the Democrats have at that time? Sure, they also had to build a case, and buying themselves a little bit of time was probably also a consideration, but that's just what I would imagine.
Well, remember, they didn't have control of the Senate at that time, so they were at the mercy of Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell, by the way, God, what a slippery eel this person is. He voted basically, or indicated that he approved of the impeachment after January 6th. Today, he voted that it was unconstitutional. You know, so what's he going to do when it comes down to whether or not he's guilty? We know how he's going to go. Let's stop fooling ourselves into thinking that you can reason with him. You will not be able to do that. He is always going to stab you in the back. Once Democrats get that, and I think they are starting to get it, because, you know, the whole thing last week, you know, with the Congressman Green, they kicked her off the committees even without Republican support, you know. And the old Democrats would have tried to compromise, would have just, you know, written a nasty letter and said, okay, we got justice. No, they're finally standing up and doing things and taking a stand. And if the Republicans don't want to work with them, then fine. We've got the majority, so we're going to do it our way. And I kind of like seeing that for a change. I kind of like seeing it land on the other side. It is nice, though, to see the occasional Republicans that do have a spine. And I think, you know, this is the time for Republicans to really step up if you want to save your party. Otherwise, it is going to be remembered as the party of fascism, the party where America was threatened and not enough people stood up and did something. Well, Adam Kinzinger from Illinois stood up. And he wrote an opinion piece in the Washington Post yesterday. My fellow Republicans, convicting Trump is necessary to save America. Just excerpts of this. I say this as a lifelong Republican who voted to impeach Trump last month. Virtually all my colleagues on the right side of the aisle took the opposite path. Most felt it was a waste of time, political theater that distracted from bigger issues. the overwhelming majority of Senate Republicans appear to feel the same way about conviction. But this isn't a waste of time. It's a matter of accountability. If the GOP doesn't take a stand, the chaos of the past few months and the past 4 years could quickly return. The future of our party and our country depends on confronting what happened so it doesn't happen again. It's well worth reading. It's a great piece. There are Republicans out there that are taking a stand, and they're paying the price for it. They're being punished by their fellow Republicans, you know, the Lee Zeldins, the fascist of the right, that will not stand up to Donald Trump, that are afraid of him, that will simply obey the orders and toe the line and do whatever they're told. It's disgusting. I cannot believe I'm seeing that in this country. And the fact that Republicans don't have enough spine en masse to challenge this and defeat this is sad, but it's to their detriment. At least, I sure hope it's to their detriment, because if it's not, it's to the detriment of the country. Something I guess we'll find out in the next couple of years. Democrats have to learn some lessons from the last election. While they won the presidency, while they won the Senate and kept the House, they lost a lot of local races. That can't continue, because you have to win all the way through in order to keep power, to keep things moving forward. Otherwise, Republicans will keep playing these tricks where, yeah, you might get a Democratic governor, but then the Republican legislature will take away all his power, so he can't do anything. Things like that will keep happening over and over again. Redistricting will continue, and your one vote won't mean as much as a Republican vote. So the minority will continue to rule this country, which is pathetic and disgusting. So Democrats have to keep fighting hard. And if they lose the House down the road in a couple of years, then that is going to be a huge loss. That's going to be terrible, because nothing will get done, and we'll move back into the Trump realm. And I sure don't want to see that.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I heard in there that I would consider is that there's this idea that the base, or that route, that amount of people, is not growing as much as the alternatives. And I mean as insofar as, like, new voters, young people. I know there are a lot of student conservative groups, of course.
Mm-hmm.
We got beat over the head with that for 4 years, so I'm well aware that that's not always true. But the youth voters that are coming in and getting engaged and familiarized with civic responsibilities and the ability to vote and all of the things that come with that, that engagement is an education, but it's spurring people. And I think if the Democrats don't put together good candidates, that essentially the pool of this base may not be growing. And what you may find from the leadership is Republicans like Kitzinger, I don't know how to pronounce it, maybe actually trying to pick up votes or could pick up votes if the Democrats don't have strong candidates. So my point is, like, even if it is a craven political thing, which I don't really think so is in his case, I think he really, really means it. And it's good to see strong Republicans. Same thing with the officials in Georgia running the campaigns and or the races, the voting commissions and stuff, Raffensperger and the like, were all Republican, but standing up for the system.
And paying the price for it.
Those people taking flack for that will gain the respect of Democrats, of people,
yes,
who do not vote for the party that they're in. So I just don't think that there's as much value in going this sycophant sort of following this base down, this dwindling base. Is it really growing?
Is it really dwindling?
Well, that's the question, I think. That's what the Republican Party is trying to figure out, and that's what everybody's, I guess, looking at, is what is the future? What are the new voters going to be thinking in the next years? Because that is how you should be thinking about the ever-growing pool of political thought that you're going to have new people coming in. You're going to have people that are swayed and changing based on what's available and you know, going with the political winds.
We've seen what happened with Marjorie Taylor Greene, with the vile things she said, and how that whipped up her base, how she wound up raising lots of money, never apologized. I mean, this is somebody who basically is saying Parkland was fake and 9/11 was fake and all these horrible things that really are hurtful to so many people and just plain wrong. And that's not enough to get her kicked out. That is not enough. So she's got the momentum. She's got all the passion. And that is what Democrats have to learn from. They have to have candidates that people get impassioned about, not just, oh, yeah, this person is better than that person. That's granted. They have to be people that you will go out in a snowstorm for to vote for. All right? You have to really be impassioned by it, and hopefully not by saying things that don't make any sense, hopefully by saying things that do make sense. And what I really am hoping is that this window of opportunity that the Biden administration has right now will prove that they know what they're talking about, that they're getting results. And maybe when people see that, more will come over to that side, but mostly the people who are already on that side will double down.
Yeah, I just don't see the incompetency from, I mean, you want to talk about young politicians, new leadership, people that are primarying Republicans or that will become inspired by what has happened to get engaged and get involved. That's a whole other aspect to it. And who is to say that Democrats aren't going to continue to campaign and find opportunities to primary other Republicans? Yeah, maybe they'll go after Democrats in various state Congress or at the national level, but it is not necessarily a foregone conclusion that the Republicans are going to be the only ones thinking about what's good and what is appealing for the average voter in the next 4 or 8 years. And that leadership, at least on the Democrat side, does not seem nearly as incompetent as Democrats before. They have a lot more at stake. They understand what happens if they screw up. And I just, from the kinds of interviews, the kind of teams that have come into play and gotten involved, I just don't find they're bad at their job. They're really, they care about the issues. They care about their constituents. They understand the privilege that it is to serve.
Absolutely, but politically, I think is where they need some sharpening, and where the rest of us need some sharpening as well. Strategy, that thing that Republicans always seem to be able to do, outwitting the Democrats by finding some archaic rule that allows them to do an end run around them and get what they want, even though they don't have popular opinion on their side. It happens time and time again. It's so frustrating and annoying, but I think that's something that Democrats are starting to learn from.
But that speaks to an issue about fighting with themselves, the infighting, because that's where politicians, people who have been around, the senior leadership, that's where their shrewd sense of how the institutions work, how to get things done as we're looking to President Biden for the future, but also on the legislative side, to understand what decorum what it takes to get things done with the institution of decorum, with the way you can navigate the various protocols and procedures and what is available to you. You need a long career, somebody who's got a great understanding of that and the staff to match it.
See, the thing that gets me, and we'll move on after this, Republicans don't seem to have any accountability for when they actually do screw up on a monumental basis, because what the party has become is, as many have said, more of a cult. And when you're in a cult, the cult leaders can do no wrong. No matter what they do, you will follow them. You will continue to back them up. And no matter what the other side does, no matter how good they may be, no matter how they might benefit you, they're still the enemy, and you still will fight against them, even if it's to your own detriment. And that is what we have been seeing over the past several years. And it's pointless to think that you can simply get those people to change their mind. No, they're not going to change their mind. What you have to do is kill the source of the disinformation and allow for a recovery period when they are cut off from this cult-like behavior. And I don't mean to be speaking down to people who might actually be in a cult, but believe me, when you're in a cult, you don't know you're in a cult. When you see how people are responding to basic logic, facts, indisputable facts, such as you didn't get as many votes as the other side, they will refuse to accept those facts because they're not the facts they want. And when that is, that becomes your life, you don't control it anymore. And you don't see that. You definitely do not see that. We have to know that there is a sickness in this country right now that cannot be ignored. And it's not going to be easy in the next few years. I only hope that, you know, we're on the winning side of it and we can continue to make it less and less powerful and dangerous. But it could easily go the other way. And we could be the ones on the run.
Yeah, it makes it very hard to speak to others when you begin to sound and really not make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And the claims and that sort of psychosis and media bubble, that isolated media and information landscape, can really suffocate people to the kind of information diet that would encourage critical thinking and perhaps questioning a little bit more of what you might be hearing from the same source that you've been conditioned to look to for truth. That's goes all the way around, but in particular, when you really stop making sense, people don't want to be around that. How can a family member or a friend trust you if you're claiming that they're violent or they're some kind of abuser with zero evidence, but they're convinced by some leadership, and you have to constantly fight some delusional conviction? People just don't want to deal. They isolate, then they cut that off because you can't trust that. If someone thinks you're violent and you're not, looks at you as though you're something that you know you're not and it is completely crazy, you're going to distance yourself from that because that's not real. And not a healthy environment and relationship. And it further isolates the people going through that.
Well, it's time now for our weekly feature films of the year that was, as we journey
yes.
down the Academy Award lane, I guess. And we have gotten to 1991.
Yes.
What film did we see from 1991,
this
Kyle?
Is an incredible. This is a thriller. This is all about sheep.
I was thrilled to see it.
It's about.
It's not about sheep.
A ranch.
It's about lambs.
All right. No, you're right. It is. The film we're referring to is The Silence of the Lambs.
They were silent. I didn't hear a peep from them.
This is an American psychological horror film, and I believe it's one of the first horror films in the Academy Award Best Picture category. Not until 1991. Can you think of another horror movie? I mean,
not really.
Drama. Along the way in this incredible journey through time.
I mean, Psycho got snubbed.
Yeah, it didn't win.
The Birds. I would have voted for that. That was the first film as a kid that terrified me. Is the Birds. Watching that on TV. You know, it was black and white, so our black and white TV set did just fine. It really, you know, because you see birds every day, and well, I don't want to relive that.
Mine was Double Indemnity, but I won't get into that.
So, Silence of the Lambs. I'd seen it before a long time ago. I think you had as well, or maybe just bits and pieces.
Insurance, it's so scary. Oh, sorry. Yes. This stars Anthony Hopkins and Jodie Foster as Clarice Starling. And she is a young FBI trainee who is hot on the trail, or in other words, assigned to Buffalo Bill, who is a psycho, crazy serial killer that is leaving these mysterious clues and just doing horrible, horrible things to people's bodies, to women in particular, very large women. Apparently, and she to get a profile has access to a psychiatrist who himself was a serial killer. This is Dr. Hannibal Lecter.
I would have said serial killer first, then psychiatrist. But if you want to put his profession before his recreational...
Well, didn't he kind of become the serial killer after... I mean, he was the doctor first, and then...
Yeah, but he was a baby first, but still, you go with the headline leader, and I think the cannibal thing, that definitely...
It's not like he was a cannibal and he just casually decided to dabble in psychiatry. I think it was the other way around. He just got really bored with his patients or something.
Well, the last thing you want is Hannibal Lecter inside your head. That's what we get from this.
Wow, and that is actually a line from the film, mm-hmm. and it is really interesting. A fascinating film. It shows a little bit of the bureaucracy of law enforcement, this young female cadet, and she's kind of earning her stripes and navigating this somewhat of a or big-time boys club of federal law enforcement. And this is a case that it's a big deal, and she's proving herself and walking into the lion's den, which everybody knows. I mean, Hannibal Lecter is brilliant in a very cunning and cold killer. So they know what she's stepping up to, what she's walking into, and so she learns very quickly that he is everything that people have made him up to be in lore, and he even challenges her. He knows and won't tell her, and really forces her to look at the evidence. He even says, you know, everything you need to know is in the case file. So he has this sort of confidence in her, but wants her dependent on him, and even is able to get rewarded for helping her understand this killer. And by sorting through leads and tracking some things down, a little bit of her own investigative work, she eventually finds Buffalo Bill's lair and doesn't really realize it, but basically stumbles into it as she narrows her suspects of interest.
Yeah, and it's done in a very methodical way. You basically, I guess, figure out the whole thing along with Clarice, as she's speaking with Hannibal Lecter, who, by the way, they only have a handful of scenes together. You get the impression after seeing this film that it's mostly dialogue between the two of them, and it's not. I think they only have maybe four total scenes together, but the suspense is built up so incredibly. You basically have two villains. You have Hannibal Lecter and you have Buffalo Bill, You're basically not sure who to root for here. Of course, I don't think I'm revealing anything by saying Hannibal Lecter escapes is basically seen on a tropical island. And there are a couple of sequels. Actually, there's I think two films that take place before this, and then a couple that take place after these events. And I just now heard that there is a TV show premiering this week about the FBI agent. That's incredible that we just saw this film and now they're having a TV show based on the film.
It's like the Fargoization of film to TV spinoff. So it is kind of exciting to see the psychological thriller drama mm-hmm. kind of emerge and from this. This particular film, I want to say, I almost said Twin Peaks was similar, but it was not a film. So like, you can't say that. It was always TV.
Well, it was a film after it was TV.
That's right, but it doesn't compare in the same way. Mm-hmm. But it is interesting. I had seen Hannibal, which is crazy scary, and that was a follow-up sequel.
It was a sequel, but it was also a series too, right?
It then became a series, I believe, after. So there've been a couple different directions. This is a little bit like Star Trek-ish in the worlds that are unfurling in every direction. But that film was really scary. I was expecting that's what this was, but I had only seen glimmers of this particular film. This is the first time I'd seen Silence of the Lambs in its entirety, and It was interesting. It was not what I expected, and there's a lot of I can see how it why it escalated, and they got a little bit went off into different gory directions mm-hmm. with the sequels. But it was good to actually see the original and understand where a lot of that stuff is coming from insofar as the story and the dynamics between them and even Buffalo Bill's character, what sort of things are being represented there, what kind of critiques coming away from it were discussed in public and critical circles. So it is a really great to see. It was a good copy of it.
They got unprecedented access to the FBI training academy at Quantico.
Yeah, on location at a lot of these buildings. They looked similar to Stony Brook a little bit, a lot of concrete, mm-hmm. Slab up, kind of brutalist.
Is it brutalist architecture?
Semi-brutalist.
Is Stony Brook brutalist? Can someone tell us this? They're brutal buildings, I know that, but there's a particular style. I know the phone company uses this a lot, and I know some prisons use it. Brutalist is kind of like Soviet-style architecture. If anyone, our architecture students can get back to us, otw@2600.com.
But those were great. Of course, the location footage of Hannibal emerging on an island. I think it was the Bahamas.
Yeah.
He was on one of those islands. So it's really cool, though, to just finally get to see the original. And
I didn't know he was after... the first time I saw this, I missed a lot, but I didn't know he was on that island to eat the doctor in charge of the prison that he was in, the criminally insane prison.
Oh, right. He's following guy who had run the prison and his tormentor of previous incarceration. So, yes, he's following him on a trip.
Dr. Chilton, I believe, was his name. And I also didn't know that Dr. Chilton was played by this guy named Anthony Heald, who played the assistant principal on Boston Public. Yeah, I didn't know that was the same guy. And now I do. These are the things that you learn when you watch these old films. You see all these people you didn't know did this, doing that, and then you suddenly get broadsided by a new TV show premiering in 2 days about the very film that you just saw. It's called Clarice. It's on CBS, I think. So I learned about it during the Super Bowl.
Wow, what? Did you get a big old check? Did they come to your door with the big one, you know, the big check? Did they pay you to sit? Yeah?
No.
Oh, yeah, you're... You're one of them.
No, what they did pay me to say, though, was that the United Arab Emirates HOPE probe has arrived at Mars. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, the hashtag is Arabs to Mars. I'm not kidding. That's what their hashtag is. A nail-biting 27 minutes, the United Arab Emirates' first-ever interplanetary mission has... I feel weird just reading those words. Has successfully reached orbit around Mars. the spacecraft is... What's all the waving? People are waving at us. The spacecraft dubbed HOPE. What, am I missing something? Oh, sorry. Yeah. That concludes our feature films of the year that was. Okay, can we move on to the story now?
Yeah, what movie are you talking about?
Bureaucracy. Okay, I'll file the paperwork later. It was launched on July 19th of 2020. It was called HOPE, if I didn't mention that. On top of a Japanese H-11A rocket, then spent 7 months... trekking to the red planet. Wait a minute, if Japan launched it, isn't it their mission? I mean, how does that work?
No.
But they're the ones that brought it into... What makes it the UAE's mission?
Because the thing at the top that's being moved by Japan, per the contract, is what counts.
So it's the cargo? That's all it is?
Yeah, the lift system itself is less important because it's not part of the mission.
Tell that to astronauts. It's pretty damn important, I think.
It's critical to the mission, but it is not the mission itself.
Okay, well, obviously I wouldn't get along on any of these missions. It spent 7 months on its way to the red planet. So today, HOPE needed to fire its thrusters for about a half hour straight to slow down enough to slip into orbit around the red planet from 75,000 miles per hour to 11,000 miles per hour. Still seems a little hot to come into a planet. Mission personnel on the ground could only watch what happened and hope for the best. You might say, why is United Arab Emirates sending probes to Mars? I the more that send probes to Mars, the better. I want to learn more about that planet. Two more probes arrived this month, China and the United States. 7 minutes of terror when the United States arrives in, I think, about a week or so. So that is going to be something. They're going to have a helicopter, a little baby helicopter that's going to fly around the atmosphere. They're going to finally, listen to my advice. They're going to put a microphone on. We're going to hear what Mars sounds like. That is going to be something. I promise you. We will broadcast the sounds of Mars on this radio program because that's the kind of thing that we do.
And NASA said that they would send us the file.
Yeah, yeah. In some obscure format that we probably can't read, but we'll figure out a way to do it.
Yeah, joke's on them. We've done that before. We've changed. We know how to convert files.
Another snowstorm. We had more snow. I'm very happy. I approve of this winter so far. It's been snowy. It snowed several times. It even snowed a little bit today. The temperature is staying below freezing. You know, I follow all the rail cams on YouTube. They basically have cameras at passing trains and Amtrak stations and things like that. It's awesome to watch while you're doing other things, obviously. And most of them have snow on the ground. And that is really cool to see all the parts of America that have snow right now. So if you have snow on the ground where you are, be happy. It's part of winter. Be glad that you have a winter. And spring will follow. And we'll all be able to go outside again and hang out and do fun things. And I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'd love to plan some of those kinds of adventures. I've taken to reminiscing every time it strikes me, I mention a different trip or a different train or a different moment that I had a lot of fun or was grueling, but now that it's over, I look back on somewhat fondly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's true. Well, there will be more, and we're all going to get through this. Folks, the vaccine is coming. If it hasn't gotten to you yet, it will soon. The production is increasing. And with everybody who gets a vaccine, that's one less person that you have to compete with. So it's getting better. It will get better. I'm not just saying that because I found out I qualify. I'm saying that because it's math. It's how it's going to work. And looking forward to it.
Conserve your lab supplies. There's a lot of scientists out there that are trying to find things, trying to test things and give us answers, and they're having shortages of equipment as well. So, you know, make sure you're not taking lab supplies from others that are really helping the rest of society.
And please follow the science. Please listen to what people say who know what they're talking about. Wear those masks. Keep social distancing. Hopefully we're in the home stretch, and we only slow things down if we make it harder. And when the time comes, get that vaccine so that you're safe, so that the people around you will be safe. Hey, I want to go out with, I'm going to do this a few times, actually. I want to go out with a song I remember from my childhood, and hopefully somebody out there also remembers. I want the kind of reaction where, like, say if you're driving, all right, and I play this song, you get all excited and you jump up and down. Well, okay, if you're driving, just be careful. Get excited, but be careful. And say, I haven't heard this song in forever. I remember this song like it was yesterday, but nobody plays it anymore. Whatever happened? And, well, if you do arrive at your destination safely, why don't you send us an email saying that's what happened to you? Or even if you're jumping up and down your house, otw@2600.com. I'm playing a song by a group called Mouth and McNeil. And I swear, when I was a kid, I did not know that was the name of the people who did this song. They're from Holland. I didn't know that either. I knew that Golden Earring was from Holland. I knew that Focus was from Holland. I did not know these guys were from Holland. So this is a song that was a big hit when I was in junior high school. And I don't know if I've heard it since, but I found it. We will see you next week. Say goodnight, Kyle.
Good night.
Good night.
Once I said I want a shoe, I don't remember why. I often wonder if it's true that you could make me cry. I only know it's long ago, you said I love you too. But I got one solution left, we're gonna start a new.
How do you do? or not, na 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 na, just me and you. And then we can, na 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 na, just like before. And you will say, na 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 na, please give me more. And you will think, na 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 na, hey, that's what I'm living for. Na na na, hey, that's what I'm living for.